Good evening, everyone. I was just reflecting that I really like those moments of before something is going to happen, when you don't know what's going to be said and I don't know what's going to be said. And, you know, it's like in the small groups when nobody knows who's going to speak next. And there's a kind of a real unknownness about that moment, which I find really, really rich and kind of pregnant with possibility. And that's not the theme of the talk tonight, but kind of just wanted to appreciate that those moments. The theme actually is the challenges and the difficulties of meditation and life. I add the life just in case any of us were to think that what we're doing here is in any way an esoteric practice that's separate from our everyday lives, as I'm sure you've found in the last 24 hours that your life, your everyday life, probably hasn't been missing from your experience while you've been here, even if you've been in a very peaceful state. Life is here. Life is here with us all the time. And everything we do here really is, I feel, for the benefit of living an awakened, a compassionate, a wise life, you know, so that the separation is one of form. And it's of great value, the form that we have, where we put aside the responsibilities and the activities of daily life, where we simplify our lives. We don't have the internet, TV, cell phones, newspapers. And we practice in a way that monastics and other practitioners have done for centuries. It's this very simple practices of sitting and walking and eating and the other things that we do during the day, and bringing awareness to our experience. It's very simple and in some ways quite idyllic. You might feel or have felt a real freedom in letting go of the obligations and the busyness of daily life. That may well be part of your experience, just kind of like putting things down for a while. It can be a real sense of relaxing and releasing and relief in that. But even though this is a very simple practice, it's not easy, as probably everyone here has experienced. I'm sure that you've all experienced challenges of one kind or another, even in these 24 hours we've been together. Perhaps tiredness, quite common at the beginning of retreats, periods of restlessness, busy mind, mind that's kind of wants to go everywhere and hard to tame, maybe difficult emotions, fear, worry, or anger about something in your life, maybe something that happened over the holidays. Maybe there's doubt. Why did I come here? Is this the right practice for me? Maybe a practice with more talking might work better for me. Now, all of these things arise and natural and arise naturally in our experience. Nothing odd about any of those, or probably any of the experiences that have arisen for any of us here. Kind of a natural arising. But that doesn't mean they're natural doesn't mean that it's easy for us to hold and be with what's arisen or what's arising for us. As you know and are hearing quite regularly, the simple and the basic instruction and encouragement is to be aware of what is arising in our experience. And when difficulties arise, to be mindful, to bring a conscious awareness to the challenges without needing to judge them or get rid of them or hold on to them. Experiencing what is here just as it is. So really quite basic, isn't it? Just whatever arises, we bring awareness, a kind and a non-judging awareness to our experience. So that's really what this practice of mindfulness is, this bringing a kind, non-judging awareness to what's present, to what's here and now. If you would just begin, I'll invite you to, if you want to close your eyes, or not, you don't need to get into any formal meditation posture, but just let the attention go inward for a few minutes. Bring your attention to your experience, the body, emotions, and the mind. And what do you notice? Just see if you can connect with anything that feels difficult, uncomfortable, annoying in what's here right now. Sometimes it's just a very light sense of tension, maybe in the chest or the belly, the throat. Maybe it's a little bit of discomfort in how you're sitting. You know, it's hard for us ever to get into that perfect position, you know, just to be completely comfortable. Maybe something's arising in the mind that feels, you know, difficult to be with right now. Maybe it's a kind of slight overlay of sadness or some other emotion. Just notice if you can, if you can connect with any experience this kind, notice how it manifests in your body. Perhaps there's some tension or tightness, maybe heat, pressure. Just whatever's here, just bring into awareness. And I'd invite you first to just say no in your mind to what it is you're experiencing. Just bring the energy of no, wanting to kind of get rid of this experience. Just for a moment, just feel that energy of no. What does it feel like when you say no? How does your body feel? Does your mind feel open or tight? Just notice, however it is for you now. And now just relax, let yourself come back to regular awareness. Let your attention come to your breathing or the sounds. Just resting in an easy, relaxed attention to your experience, not focusing on anything particular. And now let your attention come again to the place of tightness or tension or discomfort. Notice again what that feels like. Qualities of the sensations, pressure or tightness or tingling, whatever's here. And now say yes in your mind to this experience. Allow it to be just as it is, without resistance, without judgment. Opening to what you're feeling. Let the feeling be as big as it wants to be. Just allow it to be however it wants to be, however it wants to express. You might say, it's like this. And notice the difference, if any, between saying no to your experience, wanting it to be different or wanting it to end, and allowing it to be just as it is. So however that was for you, if that was in any way helpful, just to kind of feel energetically what it's like to resist our experience, and what it's like energetically in the felt sense, in the body, in the heart, in the mind, to say yes to what's here, to welcome what's present. Allow it to be just as it is. This practice of mindfulness, the word is sati, S-A-T-I in the Pali language, is very central to the Buddha's teachings. It's one of the eight elements of the Noble Eightfold Path. the path to the end of suffering. It's called wise or right mindfulness. It's also one of what are called the seven awakening factors. These are qualities of heart and mind that incline us towards awakening, towards freedom. In the same way, the Buddha says, as the river inclines towards the sea or inclines towards the ocean, in the same way as the river inclines towards the sea, so these qualities of awakening incline us towards awakening, incline us towards liberation. And the quality of mindfulness balances three factors that are energizing. Investigation is one of them. Energy is another. Joy is a third. Balances these energizing factors with three stabilizing factors: contentment, concentration, and equanimity. I didn't mention those. We'll be speaking about a number of these over these days together. We'll be talking about practicing concentration and bringing awareness to joy and investigation and these other qualities. But just to say that the mindfulness is this very central quality of the Buddha's teachings and practices. And one reason why it is so central is that without the quality of sati, without the quality of mindfulness, we tend to replay the past. We respond to the present moment's experience in a conditioned or automatic way. We respond from our habits and our patterns and our impulses. So if a difficult experience arises, say there's a feeling of sadness or emotional pain, without mindfulness, we may push the feeling away. It's too difficult, it's too painful to stay with. We may distract ourselves, find something pleasant or comfortable to avoid it or to take our mind off of the discomfort or the pain. Get a cookie or a glass of wine or surf the internet or get lost in thoughts about the experience without actually feeling it. So without this quality of mindfulness, we tend to just be governed by our past experiences because we go with the energies that are already there. You know, because there's not awareness, we're just going with the habit patterns, we're really with the conditioning, with the weight of the past experiences, really. With mindfulness, we open to our experience as it is, allowing it to be as it is. And in this knowing, in this willingness to be with our experience, is the deep freedom that the Buddha's teachings point to. Is really at the core of the Buddha's teachings is the freedom that arises from this being with our experience, just as it is. Here's how the Buddha explains it, somewhat simplified. He says, we contact experience through our five senses and through the mind. So we see objects, we hear sounds, we smell odors, etc. We cognize thoughts and what comes through the mind. So that's how we take in the world, through these five senses, or in Buddhist psychology, six of them, including the mind, through this contact, eye contact, ear, nose, etc. This contact gives rise to a feeling tone. We experience the image or the sound or the smell or the touch or the thought as either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Without mindfulness, our conditioning, our habit energy, tends to lead us to grasp onto the pleasant experiences, to push away the unpleasant, and to kind of space out from the neutral. So to say that again, without mindfulness, our conditioning, the habit energy, tends to lead us to grasp onto what feels like, oh, I like this, I want more of this. I don't like this, I want to get rid of it. This is neutral, it kind of isn't interesting to me. I kind of get distracted or space out from it. This clinging, what the Buddha talks about it as, when there isn't mindfulness, this feeling tone leads to clinging, that leads to grasping or aversion. either grasping on or pushing away. And this clinging is a cause of suffering. We suffer when we can't have or hold on to the pleasant feelings that we want. We can't get rid of the unpleasant or the neutral. So in this way, past energy defines the present moment's response in the absence of mindfulness. There's really the weight of karma, of past intentional actions, how they weigh on the present moment, and how mindfulness really brings this opportunity for things to go in another direction. When we can bring mindfulness to our experience, we can break this cycle of habitual behavior, of reactivity. This is sadness. It's like this. Tingling behind the eyes, fluttering in the heart area. This is discomfort. It's like this. Pressure, tightness, hardness. We can allow ourselves a full internal experience of what we're feeling. We can allow ourselves a full internal experience of what's here. And when we respond, if we decide to move or take some action or change a position, it will then come from a place of mindfulness rather than a place of reactivity. So the present moment is pivotal. It's a kind of a fork in the road. Habitual or automatic response leads to suffering. So without mindfulness, with mindlessness, we kind of go around in a circle, just repeating, really just acting out the past, acting out automatic behavior, conditioned behavior. Mindfulness, on the other hand, creates the conditions for freedom of the heart. The Sufi poet, as you probably heard, Rumi, invites us to welcome the guests. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. So if we can bring this quality of welcoming the guests that are here, welcoming the difficult emotions as well as the joy, welcoming the anger, the sadness, the grieving, see what it's like to just say, yes, welcome, come on in, have a cup of tea. Here's how Anne Morrow Lindberg puts it in connection with pain. Working with pain, which probably many of us here have experienced over this time together, or may still have to come. She says, go with the pain. Let it take you. Open your palms and your body to the pain. It comes in waves like a tide. And you must be open as a vessel lying on the beach, letting it fill you up, and then retreating, leaving you empty and clear. With a deep breath, it has to be as deep as the pain. One reaches a kind of inner freedom from pain, as though the pain were not yours but your body's. The spirit lays the body on the altar. So we have to be willing to accept our suffering in order to free ourselves from suffering. The Buddha talked about two kinds of suffering. One is the suffering that perpetuates suffering, where we think getting the thing that we want is going to, you know, that we're craving, will solve our problem and will make us happy. And then maybe it does for 30 seconds or a short time or a day. And then, because the problem was never the thing itself, but the energy. We want more, we want more. We see that clearly, obviously, in addiction and obsession and that kind of thing, where that energy of, where the suffering just leads to more suffering. We just keep going round in circles. You might have experienced this in your life sometime. I have. And then there's the suffering that leads to the end of suffering. And that comes from the willingness to be with our experience, where we actually use the suffering to awaken. We awaken by going into, as Anne Morrow Lindberg says, by going really into the center of the pain and the difficulty. It actually is transformed in that process. A change takes place by that willingness to be with the experience. When we're willing to be with something the way it is, it changes. When we're willing to be with something the way it is, it changes. This is from Ajahn Sumedho. He says, whatever way it is for you is the way it is. And that's what you learn from. That's where enlightenment is, right there, where you're an emotional wreck. So right there is where enlightenment is. There's this present moment, any moment, there's an inevitability about it. Not in the sense of kind of it had to be or is predicted to be, but in the sense that it's unavoidably here right now. And how we respond is where the freedom really lies. We can't change what's here right now. It's however it got here, whatever karmic processes brought this, whatever the this is, to our door and to our minds and our hearts. It's here now. And it's how we respond to this that is really the gateway to freedom of the heart. And that's really the core of the Buddha's teachings. So we bring awareness to what's here now. But though the practice is a very simple one, it's not hard to state that, is it? It's probably not hard to understand that. It's not an easy practice. The habit energy of the mind can be very strong. And it can be difficult to be with our experience despite our best intentions. We may really want to be, and yet it can be really difficult. The energy of pulling in another direction can be very strong. Somebody said, one who mounts a wild elephant goes where the wild elephant goes. One who mounts a wild elephant goes where the wild elephant goes. Pretty inevitable, isn't it? And the untrained mind can be like a wild elephant. The Buddha said, nothing can do you more harm than an untrained mind. And we only have to look around our world. That the suffering, the wars, the violence, the injustice, the hatred really come from untrained minds. I don't believe they come from kind of original evil or sin, but rather from an inability to see things clearly. And really an inability to be with our own experience. To really hold it fully. Because if we could fully hold our experience, then we wouldn't have to act it out on the world, would we? Wouldn't we have to make them the problem? You know, violence and hatred could stop somewhere, can stop somewhere. And as the Buddha says, it can stop with me. It can stop with each one of us. But where there's not mindfulness, then we just play out this cycle, you know, within ourselves and in relationship with others and in the world. The Buddha said, nothing can do you more good than a trained mind, not even your parents. So this is really a practice of training our minds or retraining our minds. There may also be for many of us places of pain or trauma that are too painful for us to stay with. So even if we intend to and want to go to those places, the mind may just say, you know, I'm out of here because of the pattern maybe that was set up earlier in our lives. It's just not really possible for us to go there. It's too painful or it's overwhelming to go to those places. So when that is the case, we train the mind to be able to more skillfully or more fully go to those places of pain and hurt and trauma that otherwise we wouldn't be able. We wouldn't have perhaps the capacity to really stay with, to really abide in those places. So there are skillful means that we can use. So we train the mind by cultivating wholesome qualities, kindness, concentration, equanimity, joy. And we use what are called skillful means to help us open to the freedom that comes from acceptance, from non-resistance to what is. So I want to talk a little bit about just one approach to these skillful means and the cultivation of wholesome qualities that can allow us, can help us work with painful, difficult, and challenging situations in our in our meditation and, of course, in our lives. A very simple and profound way of approaching and opening to our experience is through the practice of RAIN, the acronym RAIN, R-A-I-N. And I'm sure many of you have, Tara has talked about this and other teachers talked about RAIN. RAIN stands for recognizing, allowing, investigating, and not identifying with our experience. I'll talk in turn about each of those elements and the skillful qualities of heart and mind that we can bring to this practice of really being with our own experience. I personally find it a very valuable way of practicing because it points to and evokes really essential qualities of heart and mind that can help me and help us awaken. So just saying a few words about each of these qualities in turn. The recognizing. In recognizing our experience, we're really cultivating mindfulness, an open and non-judging awareness of our experience. We're letting our experience be just as it is. So we're not changing, we're not judging, we're not resisting. We're letting life be life without controlling or resisting. So we're just recognizing what's here. With mindfulness, there's an inherently a quality of kindness and compassion toward our experience. Because when we open to our experience, we're already kind of doing that, evoking really a quality of friendliness, of kindness, of compassion. We're not fighting with or controlling or trying to control our experience, which we're doing a lot of the time in our lives, trying to control the world, trying to get things the way we want them, the right amount of the pleasant and the right amount of the unpleasant, preferably none. So we're also evoking qualities of courage in our willingness to stay and let what is be what it is. We're cultivating an open-heartedness and an undefendedness. So just opening to what's here, this practice of mindfulness is already kindness and compassion. There's opening the heart to just say, this is how it is right now. We're really trusting in life. We're trusting in awareness. You know, we're trusting that we have the capacity to be able to hold, you know, what may be very difficult and very painful to hold. We're letting down our barriers and accepting that this is how things are right now. And with the quality of allowing, the second element, we're making the cultivation of kindness and compassion toward our experience even more explicit. When the heart is open, we can hold our experience with kindness and without resistance. But often the person that it's hardest for us to show kindness and compassion to is ourself. You know, probably a number of you here have that feeling of, I know I was at a retreat recently and doing interviews, and a number of people came in and said, you know, I find the compassion and the loving kindness practices, I can do that with my family and my friends and others, but I find it really hard to do it with myself. And it's not an uncommon thing, I think, in our culture that there's a lot of self-judgment, even self-hatred. And so to evoke the qualities, the wholesome qualities of kindness and compassion towards ourselves really requires some skillful means. And we'll talk a little about these. I'll talk about some of these qualities and practices tonight. And over the days ahead, we'll be working with these, particularly with the heart practices in the afternoon, but other times as well. So there are simple practices that we can do to open the space in the heart to hold whatever life is bringing. I'll invite you again to, if you like, you can close your eyes or keep your eyes open. But just let your attention go inward again. And notice again if there is any place of discomfort or tension, difficulty or pain. And if you can touch into anything, notice where you feel that in your body. be aware of any thoughts that arise in connection with the experience, but without identifying them or following them, without letting the thoughts proliferate, just notice the thinking that might come up too. And as you rest in the bare experience, might be tension or tightness in kind of the core, in the belly. Notice right now my kind of tension in my stomach. I'm aware of that, a little bit in my chest. Or maybe it's some warmth in the face or pressure in some part of the body. If there's some sadness, it might be around the eyes or around the heart area. So just open to what's present. And you might use a simple phrase, may I be at ease. May I be happy. Or you could just use a word, love or safe. Whatever helps evoke a felt sense of well-being in you that can help hold the difficult experience. Just sit with that for a moment, using a word or phrase if it's helpful to you. And what we're doing really is we're allowing what's difficult or painful to be present. We're not pushing it away or rejecting it, but we're opening to a larger experience. It's not the totality of everything that's here. And obviously, if we're dealing with something that may be just a minor discomfort, probably we're aware of a larger experience as well. But when we're really caught up, kind of really identified with our experience, very strong emotion or strong desire where we're kind of clinging and gripping, it can really feel like that's all there is right now. We can lose connection with the larger field of our lives and life more broadly. You could also move your attention from the place of difficulty or tension or discomfort and just let your attention move, scan through your body as a whole, and find if there's a place of ease or well-being or comfort. And if you can connect with that, locate that, connect with a sense, it might just be a feeling of groundedness on your seat or your cushion. It might be an overall bodily feeling of things are okay. So if you can connect with that, open to that, open to the felt sense of ease or peace or joy, or whatever that feeling is, well-being. See if you can allow that to expand and spread through your body. If you can, let this place of tension or pain or discomfort be held within a larger space of well-being or ease. If it's difficult to find a place in the body of peace or ease or well-being, you could also bring to mind a person or a being who's dear to you, or a place that you connect with peace and well-being, walking on a beach or in a forest. One that comes to me is being about 10 years old and just sitting every Saturday up in a big fir tree, just not a care in the world at that time. And when I bring that image to mind, I feel there's a felt sense in the body of just kind of relaxing and things feel okay. You know, and if there's difficulty, I can hold that difficulty within that space of felt sense of ease and well-being. So cultivating these ways of being able to hold our experience. And what we can do is if we can evoke that larger feeling of well-being, we can then touch into the place of pain or difficulty, you know, and stay as much as we can with that. Stay in the heat or the tingling or the pressure or the tightness or the sadness or the anger, what's there. And if it feels like it's coming to be too much, we can come out into that larger field of well-being or peace or joy. We can use these practices of touching in and touching out to allow ourselves to hold the experiences that otherwise we might find just too difficult. And particularly if you've had experiences of trauma, it's really almost necessary to have the ways of being able to touch in and touch out, to be able to kind of have that regulation so that we don't get kind of pulled into the vortex, the whirlpool, as it were. So to be able to know that these skillful means are available to us, you know, and to cultivate them and really to become familiar and intimate with these ways in which we can hold our experience with kindness, with friendliness. So we can use these kinds of skillful means to open fully. So I'll notionally ring the bell. Coming back to everyday talking. We can use these kinds of skillful means to help us open fully to our experience. And in recognizing and allowing our experience to be as it is, one thing we're doing, or one set of qualities we're evoking or cultivating, are what are called the Brahma Viharas, the divine abodes. There are four divine abodes, or skillful qualities of heart that are conducive to awakening and that are an expression of the awakened heart and mind. The first two of the Brahma Viharas are loving kindness, and Pat led a metta meditation this afternoon. The second is compassion, or karuna. Loving kindness, I'll talk a little bit and mention the other two in a moment. Loving kindness is really an unconditional open-heartedness. Love without control or expectations. And loving kindness towards ourselves is essential if we are to offer genuine love to others. So really it's important that we be able to open our hearts to our own experiences, to our own suffering. Compassion is opening the heart to the suffering of oneself or another, opening to our own difficulties. We can use a word or a phrase to hold our own suffering, to hold it with kindness. May I be held in compassion. May I be at peace. We could just use a word like peace. The third of the Brahma Viharas is joy. And I just want to mention the other two, these last two, on mudita, which is opening our heart in happiness to our own or another's happiness. Sometimes it's called sympathetic joy. You know, joy in the well-being of another. I hear that you've done really well, and open to in happiness toward your happiness. And as with the other Brahma Viharas, the other divine abodes, opening to our own happiness as well as the happiness of others. So joy is a natural expression of this practice of opening to our own experience. As we sit and the mind becomes more still and balanced, a natural joy arises that we can rest in and cultivate. So in case this talk is too much emphasizing the suffering and the difficulties and the painful and all of that, just to bring to the surface the joy, which is an intrinsic part of this practice. The Buddha's Sangha was known for the radiance of the members of the community, the happiness that they exuded, which obviously didn't come from winning the lottery or material wealth or owning big houses, you know, because they just had the robes and the bowl and the medicine. But the inner happiness, inner joy that they kind of brought into the world, this great joy that comes from ease and well-being in the heart of the absence of greed, hatred and delusion. The fourth of these divine abodes is equanimity. And in recognizing our experience and allowing it to be just as it is, we're really practicing equanimity. It is a practice of equanimity. It's not saying give me the joyful and get rid of the sorrowful or the difficult. It's actually saying, as Rumi says, welcome the guests. Welcome them all. Welcome the joys and the sorrows. Don't differentiate. Don't say you've got to leave early because I don't like you. But you can stay as long as you like because, you know, you can stay for a whole week because I really like you. It's really having that quality of an even mind where whatever comes up, we treat it with this quality of openness, of non-grasping and non-resisting. We can make our minds so like still water that beings gather around us that they may see their own images and so live for a moment with a clearer, perhaps an even a fiercer life because of our quiet. I'll read that again. We can make our minds so like still water that beings gather around us that they may see their own images and so live for a moment with a clearer, perhaps even a fiercer life because of our quiet. Anyone know who that is? Have a guess? I would have said Arjun Chah, but it's actually W.B. Yeats. Irish poet. That's a kind of very Buddhist. So it sounds like Arjun Chah, a clear forest pool. This is what the Buddha said. Praise and blame, gain and loss, pleasure and pain, fame and disrepute are the eight worldly winds. They ceaselessly change. As a mountain is unshaken by the wind, so the heart of a wise person is unmoved by all the changes on this earth. The heart of a wise person is unmoved by all of the changes on this earth. So we're cultivating all of these qualities, just in this recognizing and allowing our experience to be as it is. An important part of this practice is to know and acknowledge and accept that we're going to stumble, that we're going to become contracted, that we're going to act unskillfully. And to be able to bring kindness and compassion and humor to our own humanness. You know, not to have this be another source of judging ourselves for not doing it right or not doing it well enough. To know that we're going to fall down the hole and we're going to do it quite often. Then in the Zen tradition, they say Zen or life is one mistake after another. One mistake after another. We could also see that as one opportunity to learn and grow after another. And the Zen poet and hermit Ryokan said, last year, a foolish monk. This year, no different. Last year, a foolish monk. This year, no different. I love that. The third part of RAIN is investigating. And this can be sometimes be confusing to people. In investigating our experience, we're not analyzing it or thinking about it. You know, where did this pain come from? Who did this to me? Do I have a disease? Maybe my anger comes from when my mother bought me the wrong present when I was 5 years old. You know, that kind of analyzing, which there are times and places for. These may be very interesting questions, but the investigating that we do in this practice of mindfulness is more visceral, more immediate, and more intimate. We bring our awareness to our experience. We investigate a bodily feeling or an emotion. What are the qualities? You know, there's tingling or throbbing, pinching, heat, pressure. Now, just be aware, name the qualities if it's helpful. Oh, this is tingling. This is pulsing, vibrating. This is heat. We become intimate with our experience. Is there movement? Do the sensations move? Do they go outward or inward? Are they going this way or that way? Does the feeling get stronger? Or does it become less intense? Or does it stay the same? This investigation, this quality of investigation, can help us see deeply into our experience and into the characteristics of all experience. We can see that it's impermanent. If we really watch this changing flow of experience, not as a story about, oh, this is happening and this is always happening to me, or this is pain, and we solidify it. But actually, we bring a kind of intimate attention to our experience. We notice how much it changes. You know, maybe it gets stronger for a while, then it goes away, comes back, changes form. You know, it's tingling now, and now it's pressure, now it's pinching, now it's heat. And if we can just follow in that way, we can see into some deep truths about the way experience is, the way life is, impermanence, that it all changes, that it's not this solid, unchanging thing. We can see that anything we do try to cling to causes suffering, that if we want to make something last, oh yeah, I want this to stay, then we will soon find that if we really are identified with the keeping of this experience, then suffering will come from that, because we're not going to get, you know, anything to last, or we want to get rid of something for good, we want to push it away, we'll find that that clinging leads to suffering, and that we can explore if there's any self involved in any of this. Is any of this really I or mine? This teaching of anatta in Buddha's in Pali, that none of it really is I or mine, none of this experience. It's life flowing through us, energy in movement. And that the I really comes from the identification. The I comes from the clinging, from the holding. So this quality of investigation arises from mindfulness. It's the second of the seven factors of awakening. The poet Kabir says, "When the eyes and ears are open, even the leaves on the trees teach like pages from the scriptures." When the eyes and the ears are open, even the leaves on the trees teach like pages from the scriptures. The fourth of the qualities of RAIN, non-identification, really arises out of recognizing, allowing, and investigating. As we let our experience be just as it is, as we cultivate friendliness and kindness towards what's present, and investigate our experience in a direct and a non-conceptual way, certain insights tend to arise. The insights into these three characteristics of impermanence, suffering, and non-self is one of the core understandings or truths of the Buddha's teachings. Our experience becomes more impersonal. It's not so much about the I or the me. We see its changing nature. And we see more clearly that if we try to resist what is or hold on to what we like, then we suffer. So we see into deeper truths about our experience. So out of this, these basic practices of bringing a kind attention to our experience, bringing friendliness to our experience, then this non-identifying comes more and more to the fore. This not identifying, seeing our experience more like as a weather system passing through than something that's I or mine, is really an expression of wise understanding. It's seeing things really the way they are. Wise understanding is the first of the eight elements of the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path. We're experiencing life unfolding naturally rather than through the prism of our desires and our fears. We're just watching, experiencing life as it is. So the practice is simple, allowing our experience to be as it is, non-resistance to the way things are right now. But our habitual ways of thinking and acting are strong. We take our experiences personally. We identify with them, we solidify them, and we suffer. We're not doing anything wrong. It's quite understandable. It's not a personal fault of yours or mine. It's the way these minds work, the way the untrained mind works, until we see that there is actually another way. We're like the monk in a cave who painted the tiger on the wall, and every time he looked at it, he became terrified. We create these monsters out of our own, you know, out of our own fears, out of our own resistance, out of our own unwillingness to be what is. And then they become reified and they become kind of stronger as time goes on. The main difficulties we experience in meditation are called the hindrances in Buddhist teachings. Often at these retreats, there'll be a talk, particularly on the hindrances, and I've just approached the hindrances in a kind of a somewhat different way. But there are five of these hindrances. Sense desire, which is the wanting mind. Perhaps you're familiar with that. You know, the mind that wants to have something. Or there's grasping, and with that grasping, there's suffering when we don't get what we want. And even when we do get what we want and realize that we want more of it, something different. There's aversion, which is the wanting not to have mind, wanting to get rid of. There's sloth and torpor, you know, the tiredness, the lethargy of the body and the mind. Probably you may have experienced some of this over the time together. There's restlessness and worry, which is the fourth, the kind of agitation, anxiety, all of that coming up in the mind, these difficult energies that arise. And there's the fifth is doubt, you know, doubt about yourself, doubt about the teachings, doubt about the teachers, doubt, you know, the way that the mind can say, oh yeah, this isn't worth it, or I'm no good at this, all of that. When these hindrances arise in the mind, they're experienced as obstacles to being present, obstacles to awakening. But they're not inherently a problem. They're not inherently a problem. They're a problem insofar as we identify with them. So our practice is one of mindfulness and non-resistance. If we can bring awareness to this energy of anger or sadness or difficult emotions that are arising, then they're not in, it's not in itself a problem. Problem is in the grasping onto them or wanting to get rid of them. So we use skillful means to embrace and hold our experience, to cultivating a quality of non-resistance to what is. I want to finish off, and I'm getting close to time and I'm conscious of this, but I just want to make one thing clear in order to avert any misunderstandings. Sometimes this language of accepting and allowing and non-resistance can be heard as passivity or acceptance of what is unacceptable, you know, of like passivity, oh, just okay, just whatever's going on, just accept it. Accepting what's unacceptable or what should be struggled against. Should we be non-resistant or allowing in the face of the genocide in Darfur or in the face of greed and corruption in our own country? But what we're doing actually in these larger situations of Darfur or the larger injustices in the world is we're actually taking in and holding all that's arising in our own experience. Could be anger, outrage, sadness, despair, the energy to make change. And we're allowing ourselves to fully experience all of that. And when we do that, it's from that being with our experience that love and connection and compassion can arise and most fully unfold and be expressed in the form of wise action in the world. So what we're calling on ourselves to do is to hold our own experience of the situation, whatever the situation is, not to deny it or push it away, but to really own that, own all of our responses to it. And out of that being with the experience, then comes action based on love and compassion, action from a place of wholeness rather than reactivity, which is often the way we do it. Our mind gets contracted. These are bad people. They shouldn't be doing this. We respond in that kind of a way. So with these skillful means, cultivating non-resistance to what is, saying yes to our experience, welcoming the guests, practicing, recognizing, allowing, investigating, not identifying, we open to an awareness that is not dependent on or affected by changing conditions, but that can hold whatever conditions arise. And this is what Tara talked about this morning. At any point, we can drop into this natural awareness that's present, that's always available to us. But it's very helpful. The skillful means that I've been talking about this evening, these are really helpful to really create, to kind of till the soil, to be able to have the mind be calm enough and concentrated enough and open enough and mindful enough to be able to more easily just drop into just this, you know, what's sometimes called intuitive awareness or natural presence. It's an awareness that's naturally present when we're not caught up and identified with the content of our experience. So it's an awareness that where we're not caught up with the content, with whatever it is we're identified with. It's like the open space of this hall. We could make the loudest and most cacophonous sound or outrageous smells or sights, and the space would just open and hold it all. The conditions would change. Conditions can change, but the awareness remains unaffected. So I just finish up with a short few words from, this is from Ajahn Amaro, talking about this awareness, this knowing, talking about resting in the knowing. He says, when there is resting in the knowing, then nothing can touch the heart. That knowing nature is invulnerable, inviolable. What happens to the body, emotions, and perceptions is secondary, because that knowing is beyond the phenomenal world. So that is the true refuge. Whether we experience pleasure or pain, success or failure, praise or criticism, that knowing nature of the mind is utterly serene. It is undisturbed and incorruptible, just as a mirror is unembellished and untainted by the images it reflects. The knowing cannot be touched by any sense perception, any thought, any emotion, any mood, any feeling. It's of a transcendent order. The Dzogchen Tibetan teachings say this too. There is not one hair's tip of involvement of the mind objects in awareness, in the nature of mind itself. There is not one hair's tip of involvement of the mind objects in awareness, in the nature of mind itself. That's why awareness is a refuge. Awareness is the very heart of our nature. So let's finish with just a very short, quiet moment. Thank you very much for your kind attention, and as is the case, always the case, take with you anything that is helpful from what I've shared this evening, and leave behind anything that may not be of value to you in your practice and your life.